With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Pulisic had asked not to start because he was tired from international duty.
I mean, there had to be protruding bone for me to voluntarily give up a spot on the field. I was in constant fear that somebody else was going to take my spot. Hello, sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue-colored glasses. This show, we'll be talking the EPL title race, very close, Balogun, Adams, Sargent, Shielding, bike riding, Vegas, corner art, 94 reunion, Vision Quest, Roadhouse, all sorts of different things, and so much more. But first, joining me, as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox Soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how are you doing on this Sunday, March 31st in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. Happy Easter to those who celebrate.
Happy Easter to everyone out there, for those that that celebrate. And a special thanks to all the men and women and to you, Mossy, for coming in here on a Sunday and recording this on Easter Sunday. We wanted to get a show out. I am heading out on the road this week, so I will be on the road this week, but we want to make sure we have content for you. So everyone graciously agreed to come in here on Sunday afternoon slash evening and record a pod after all of the soccer that has happened over the weekend. Have you seen anything interesting, my friend?
Yeah, pleasant surprise. Last night I caught this CNN documentary on Las Vegas. It was called The Story of Sin City. Four-part documentary, very well done. I enjoyed it. Watched already all four episodes. They take you from the beginnings, the Mafia, Bugsy Siegel, Sinatra, Liberace, Elvis, Wayne Newton, sports, boxing, etc. The whole evolution of the place. So I recommend it.
It's such a quintessential American story in the way that it just... like a mirage, appeared out of nowhere, and all of the different twists and turns and the good, bad, and I suppose the ugly of it, but it's incredibly American. All right, so that's on CNN. I want to check that one out. I got two things. One, and we continue to wait on our collective review of The Matrix. I know we had mentioned that in our previous show. I have seen it. You have yet to see it. So that is still your homework. And I don't want to talk about it until you have seen it so we can talk about it together. But a couple of things. One, the remake of Roadhouse. You remember Roadhouse? I don't know if you remember this movie.
I do.
Okay, so Roadhouse, you know, an 80s movie, has turned into kind of a cult classic, starring Patrick Swayze, Sam Elliott, Kelly Lynch. And it's just a fun type of hour and a half type of movie. They remade it with Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor, I guess he's the MMA guy or whatever.
Correct.
As one of the bad guys there. You know, for something that has become so iconic and so synonymous with that decade in the look and the feel and the content, that is Roadhouse, it wasn't great. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is an incredible actor. And actually I really enjoyed Conor McGregor as like the heavy, and, he was good in it, but overall I was flat for a number of different reasons, not the least of which is the whole premise of this movie is this badass, corrupt, dirty, dark, dangerous type of establishment that is the Roadhouse. And in the original, it is all of that. And yet in the remake, it is, you know, on the side of this bucolic, beautiful Florida Keys type of setting. And it's too bright and well lit, and it's not dirty and disgusting enough to make it plausible that all of these problems are going to happen there. So that's one of the problems that I have with it.
Kate Abdo is a big boxing fan. Yes. And like all boxing fans, she hates MMA. So I remember years ago, I drove her crazy by starting an office debate as to who was more famous, Canelo Alvarez or Conor McGregor.
And
It was split in the room, which drove her crazy because she thought it was clearly Canelo.
I've never heard of this person. All right. So I've heard of Conor McGregor for all the craziness that he is that he has done. And I also mentioned this, and this is a repeat viewing of a movie that is near and dear to my heart, but it clicked in my brain because I was watching an interview with Dana White, speaking of MMA, right? He does all that.
Correct.
And he, in a really interesting and sincere type of way, talked about the movie Vision Quest as really much more than just a movie. And for those that don't, it's a movie about a high school wrestler that uses his final season to kind of really establish himself and to be bold and great in the things that he's done. But, you know, Dana White was talking about how the message of the story was, you know, ground shaking to him. And to this day, he still looks at it as a real important type of movie. So I watched it again to see if it would hold up. Number one, the soundtrack is just incredible. You know, whether it's Red Ryder and Sammy Hagar and Journey and that type of stuff. I think it was Sammy Hagar, but Journey. The soundtrack is awesome from start to finish, including the first time we ever see Madonna in a bar scene. This is the first time the public saw Madonna. She's singing a song in a bar scene. Anyway, it still holds up. And it's a really, to his point, I didn't realize this when I was watching it until I rewatched it here, how prolific it is, but how inspiring it is. And it's gotten beyond a movie. I always thought of it as much more of a teenage type of thing, but it is much more so. And so who knew? Dana White, in informing us about things to watch, or at least to go back and watch. So it still holds out. Matthew Modine, the star of it. I don't know if they have ultimately remade that, but it's probably going to be remade at a certain point, and I'll probably grumpy old man at the way I just did Roadhouse. My friend, should we light this candle?
Let's do it.
All right, where should we start? All sorts of soccer this weekend.
Yeah, we begin with the Premier League title race. Major developments on Sunday. Liverpool beat Brighton 2-1. Welbeck scored for Brighton, but Diaz and Salah found the back of the net for the Reds. And then Manchester City and Arsenal played to a 0-0 draw at the Etihad in a game that did not live up to the billing. So the weekend ends with Liverpool on top, Arsenal 2 points back, City 3 points back.
All right, first off, the Liverpool-Brighton game, a couple things that were interesting about it. Number one, the comeback type of kids, and not kids, but the mentality of Liverpool that is now a consistent. And that's a great quality to have. It's dangerous because you can go to the well and not find it, and yet they continue to go to the well and they are able to come back. Because when Brighton scored that goal, you thought, oh, wow, is this going to be one of those days for Liverpool? And they never panic. Klopp was asked about it again after the game. And you could see his mind working and the machine going, saying, I don't want to accept the fact that we are letting in goals and we go down. But I also don't want to take anything away from the important mentality that this team obviously has to be able to come back. And then the other thing that I will say on the other side is, Brighton is an incredibly romantic team in the way that they play. And sometimes I look at romantic teams and the lack of pragmatism and the idealistic way that some of these teams try to play doesn't match the actual talent that they have. But I got a lot of time for Brighton and the way that they want to play, and at times the way that they actually do play. And even in this, where they could have been forgiven of betraying who they are, they didn't. And I got a lot of respect for a team that does that.
We'll get to this later in the pod, but with Xabi Alonso staying put, the Brighton coach, Roberto De Zerbi, is now being mentioned as a possibility for Liverpool.
All right. Shall we talk a little bit about the Man City-Arsenal game?
Let's do it.
Okay. You know, they say, Mossy, that a game of crap soccer is better than a game of no soccer. Okay. This really kind of tested that, all right? It was not anything that's going into a time capsule. And it was, dare I say, one of the more boring games that I have seen in a long time. Not because there isn't talent out there, not because there isn't something at stake, but this was maybe the boring that Arsenal wanted and the boring that Manchester City is in danger of harnessing to a negative effect. That's my overall opinion of the game.
I will say, I think Liverpool are going to win the title, but in the head-to-head matchups between the three, Arsenal have fared the best. They took 4 out of 6 points from Liverpool and 4 out of 6 points from City this season.
So if you had to predict today, and has it changed over the last few hours given this result in terms of what the top three is? You just said you think Liverpool is going to win. That's not changing, right?
Yeah.
And then you think it's going to be Arsenal and then Man City.
I could go either way on that, but I'm feeling more and more like Liverpool is going to win the title.
Does it worry you, this Man City type of performance, in that they, speaking about going to the well, especially up top with Erling Haaland and the lack of dominance that we kind of expect, and maybe it's not fair to expect from him, but he is Erling Haaland.
Yeah, this is the time of the season where they usually kick on and play their best, and that's not happening. They gave a great stat on TV today. They haven't beat any of the teams in the current top five. And yeah, you mentioned Erling Haaland, man. If he doesn't get the service, his lack of involvement in matches is stark.
I might have missed it. It was coming through, but did Keane say that he looked like a second division team or a player or something like that?
To be fair, once I read the whole quote, he did couch it with, he's a brilliant goal scorer and you have to admire what he
does
in the box.
Nobody cares, but, Mossy. It's all about the headline. Yeah, it's all about the quote. How dare you even read and get any type of context and layered nuance when it comes to any type of report, whether it has to do with soccer or news out there? What is your problem?
I apologize. Right. Yeah, so he did say, though, at one point in his whole spiel that Erling Haaland looked like a fourth division player.
Oh, wow, them's fighting words, regardless of what the context or the rest of the story is. But to his point, Erling Haaland has not looked the dominant force that we expect him to be. I still think that Pep and company has something to say before the end. But this is exactly what certainly Klopp and Liverpool would have wanted to see. And to your point, for Arsenal to do this, which is very rare given the record, and to come in and to get that point, well done, Arteta.
On the American front, Tyler Adams played all 90 minutes and played very well in Bournemouth's 2-1 home win over Everton. So he is all the way back.
Yes. And again, this is great for him from an individual perspective. Again, if we look at through the glasses of the U.S. national team, bodes well for this summer. But again, the seriousness of this injury, and I'm, you know, he's young and he will have, and we know he has taken a good amount of time to come back. I'm still holding my breath, hoping that it holds in terms of that hamstring, that everything is healed. But certainly in the break, the way that he talked, he was back in terms of being a positive mentality. Obviously he made his impact on the field for the US, and now to follow that up with flying home, flying across the pond there, and going right back onto the field, that's a good thing. So knock on wood, he is heading in a much more positive direction. And hopefully it just gets better and better and better from a U.S. perspective leading into the summer.
Gio Reyna came on for the last 30 minutes of Nottingham Forest 1-1 home draw with Crystal Palace. In the press conference ahead of this match, Nuno Espirito Santo was asked about Gio's exploits with the U.S. and whether he was deserving of more playing time. He was non-committal, which I know annoyed a lot of U.S. fans, but I took it as a positive sign that he brought him on when he did. Gio played well. Nuno praised him afterwards. So I think this weekend might have been a step in the right direction.
What I wish Nuno would have said is the U.S. is not playing this game, okay? The U.S. is not what is going to decide my future. I understand how I would lump myself into this group. We see a U.S. player do really well. And again, the formist fallacy works both ways. But Gio Reyna is going back into not just a completely different environment, but a drastically different dynamic and situation. And so I think it's unfair, and it lacks understanding of what the reality is to say, well, he played well with the U.S. They won a title. They showed how important he is. So then obviously he's going to come back to that situation for Nottingham Forest. Should be starting, should be playing, and they'd be in better position as opposed to where they are right now, tied with Luton at 22 points for that last position. And it looks like it's going to come down for the next couple of months being in a relegation battle.
Staying in England, but dropping down a level to the Championship, Josh Sargent healthy again after missing the U.S.'s two games. He scored for Norwich in their 2-1 home win over Plymouth. He has scored in his last 8 home games, 14 goals in 19 championship matches this season. Let me lump these two together.
Yes.
Haji Wright, also on target for Coventry in their 3-1 away win over Huddersfield. Haji, 6 goals in his last 5 matches for club and country.
I'm glad you lumped them together because they are so kind of intertwined, Josh Sargent and Haji Wright, because in an alternate universe, and actually one that I think a lot of people had predicted and expected, it was going to be Josh Sargent that came in and played the role of Haji Wright and come out of that window looking golden. Obviously, Josh Sargent, we were deprived that because of his injury. And what ended up happening is Haji Wright said, fine, I'm going to take this opportunity. And he grabbed it with both hands. So much so that a guy that many of us, including us here, had looked at as the ship had sailed on him, is right back into the conversation. Now, it's because there's a continued vacancy in that spot up top. But Josh Sargent, from a U.S. perspective, missed that window. I don't think that this changes anything in terms of the way that Greg Berhalter is going to be thinking about the value of bringing in Josh Sargent. It just whets my appetite that much more to see what Josh Sargent can do. And again, more in my expert opinion, Mossy, the more Americans that have American passports that play soccer are scoring goals, the better off it is, especially with this competition that's coming forward. So I'm glad that Josh Sargent injury wasn't something that was going to keep him out a long time. And I'm glad he's right back to doing why we got excited about him in the first place, which is scoring goals.
Norwich in 6th place. They're 4 points above Coventry for the last promotion playoff spot. And Norwich have a massive midweek game coming up against Leicester. Staying with the American center forward theme, Folarin Balogun came off the bench for Monaco and scored twice in their 5-2 away win over Metz. According to Opta Jack, that made him the first U.S. player to score 2 goals as a substitute in a match in the top 5 European leagues since Charlie Davies did it for Sochaux back in 2009.
See, now, so this is the opposite, right? A player that I don't think had a good window, and as a matter of fact, I think brought up a lot of questions and doubts in Florian Balogun, then goes back and does something like this. So again, it's a very different type of situation, but to come on as a substitute, as a goal scorer, and to make that type of impact. Again, it's good from a U.S. perspective, but it just shows that, you know, these different environments can produce different types of players. Not that that should be a surprise to anybody, what I'm telling you.
We go to Italy next. AC Milan with a 2-1 away win over Fiorentina. Loftus-Cheek and Rafael Leão with the goals. Neither Pulisic or Musa started. They both came on as subs in the second half. And Stefano Pioli intimated afterwards that Pulisic had asked not to start because he was tired from international duty.
Oh, God. All right. Where do I start with this? Look, Christian Pulisic is heading in the direction of possibly being the best male U.S. player ever to play the game, okay? Still got a long way to go, and there's still argument and discussion, and there'll still be others that will probably have a debate about that. I was never in a position where I was comfortable. And, you know, maybe that's just an inherent insecurity of, you know, who I was as a player, maybe who I was as a person, maybe the era in which I came up in that I mean, there had to be protruding bone for me to voluntarily give up a spot on the field. I was in constant fear that somebody else was going to take my spot, either because I wasn't playing, because I did something wrong, or because I got hurt, or because I got sick, or something like that. And so I can't put myself in that mindset. And maybe it's progress. Maybe it shows how good he is and how far American players have come where they are comfortable saying, no, it's okay. And to be fair, the year that Christian Pulisic is having, I think he certainly gets the benefit of the doubt and would have much more leash than other players out there. So, but it's still, it just rubs me the wrong way. And I know there's people who say, well, he's being professional. He's, you know, doing what's good for the team. All right, but there is a value to selfishness in players if it is harnessed and used in the right way.
Yeah, Jay Leno famously never took a night off because he was paranoid about getting Wally pipped. Chukwueze started in place of Pulisic, didn't score, so it worked out. But imagine if he had gotten a hat trick.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Christian Pulisic has shown how valuable he is to this team. I mean, we've been talking about it now for months. But, and maybe I'm a little Pollyanna here in that I thought it was kind of an American trait to say, no, you had to pry it from my cold, in my case, my cold, dead, red-headed hands. And I just never, ever, ever wanted to give anybody the opportunity to take it away from me. And I played in fear. And who knows what the player I may have been had I not played in fear. But that type of apathy, it's not apathy, but release of that fear. I wish I had the ability to do that, but I didn't. All right. Anyway, he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be back in a starting capacity anyway.
Juventus continued their recent struggles. They fell 1-0 away to Lazio. Marušić with a goal in second half stoppage time. Neither McKinney or Weah started. McKinney came on at the start of the second half. Weah came on later in the second half. And I have to say, reading the comments on X, some of the back and forth between Juve fans and US fans, this contract situation with McKinney has all of a sudden created some bad vibes.
But between whom?
Juve fans and US fans. This had been such a feel-good story, but now U.S. fans are annoyed that Juve are lowballing them, and Juve fans, you're making too much out of this. McKennie's not that great, and so it's turned into an argument.
Yeah. Again, I think I said this before. If I think that there are lots of teams around the world that will pay Weston McKennie to play soccer and will pay handsomely, and they recognize his value. And if Weston McKennie really isn't that valuable to Juve, and Juve fans don't believe that he is that valuable, then he will take his services elsewhere. But if everybody recognizes that he is being lowballed and he is the money that they are offering him, and this is all speculation as to what it is, but if it is something that isn't, I guess, what he would consider fair to what he brings to the table, that's fine. It's a calculated type of move and a strategic move from Juventus. And who knows? It's Juventus, so they can certainly replace him, but he has been one of the go-to players for this Juventus team. And I think he would be paid accordingly. But that's for him and his agent to figure out, and for Weston to figure out, you know, what am I valued? And am I okay taking less to stay with this team that I enjoy? You know, by all accounts, he enjoys living in Italy, enjoys playing for Juventus. There is a value to that that you have to add in, but they're either going to pay him or they're not.
In Germany, Leverkusen heading towards their first ever Bundesliga title. They came from behind for a 2-1 home win over Hoffenheim. They're unbeaten in 39 matches in all competitions this season. Then Bayern suffered a 2-0 home defeat to Dortmund. So the gap is now 13 points with 7 to play. And this all occurred on the heels of Xabi Alonso making news on Friday. He announced at his press conference that he'll be staying at Leverkusen, not going to Bayern or Liverpool. Some interesting reaction. Most people found it refreshing in this era in which super clubs seem to get whatever they want whenever they want, and everybody's in a rush to move up. Xabi, it sounds like, feels like he needs more seasoning and he wants to coach Leverkusen in the Champions League. But there is this narrative emanating from England that he really blew it. How could you turn down clubs like Liverpool and Bayern? You got to strike while the iron is hot. He's got to understand that this Leverkusen season is an aberration and his stock might go down. How do you see it?
Well, you know how I said that when I played, I would play with a fear and be insecure. You know who doesn't have any insecurity in terms of his ability and his talent and his belief that there are going to be opportunities, and in this case, looking at a bird in the hand with what he has, well, that's Xabi Alonso. And I think this only enhances his value. I think he sees he has a good thing going here. I also think there's an element of you don't want to be the guy that replaces Klopp. You don't. The English can say what they want, and it comes from a place of arrogance in how dare he or anybody turn down an EPL opportunity. Well, the world is bigger than England, and certainly the world when it comes to the game is much bigger than the EPL. And I think that this is an example, but I also think this is Xabi, who by all accounts is also very intelligent and smart And I think he is seeing around the corner. I think that this is a long-term type of play that he is making. And I, like I said, the brand of Xavi, I think, is only enhanced by this.
I have a sneaking suspicion that his dream job is Real Madrid. Ancelotti just signed a 2-year extension, so maybe he'll wait that out. Also, Pep's contract with City runs out in 2025, so some people have linked him to that job. So maybe he thinks he can do even better than Liverpool or Bayern.
Are you willing to concede that they've won the Bundesliga?
Yes, and they're now going for an Invincibles. You know who was also going for an Invincibles? PSV, but they lost this past weekend. So they fell 3-1 to NEC. Pepe did not score to complete the U.S. center forward circle. So now it's just Leverkusen going for an unbeaten league campaign.
Do you think that Xabi is... It's warranted all of the praise, or do you think that this is an anomaly type of thing when it comes to how good or how talented he is?
I think it's warranted. He's very impressive.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the from a results standpoint, for sure. But since he is staying, we're also going to get to see whether this was just one year. And I think it's fascinating. I think that decision, because, you know, to your point, there are very few that, if they were offered that type of opportunity in England, would say, no, I'm gonna hold off. But it takes a very confident and secure type of individual, which I think he is. And like I said, the cachet that he has acquired with what he has done so far. And yeah, while it's still a short period to judge him on, I think he's going to have plenty of offers. And to your point, maybe he's got an even bigger one down the line that he is holding out for. So congratulations to Xabi and Leverkusen for the incredible year. And you get to keep your friend for a little longer, which means that who's replacing Klopp, that gets more interesting as we go forward. Anything else, Mossy?
That is it.
All right, let's take another quick break, or our first quick break of the show. And when we come back, we'll look stateside, because there was all sorts of interesting action going on from the MLS perspective. Okay, welcome back. Hey, we had a little interesting break right there. Which would give people a little peek of what's going on behind the scenes. So for those that watch the show, you will know that we are behind this desk. And oftentimes in a situation like this, there is a mark for talent. That's what they call us here. And Mossy was on his mark, but evidently it was not looking good. So we apologize if you did not get the full effect of Mossy in that first segment. We had all sorts of craziness going on behind the scenes, but I think we have worked it out to give you the best possible Mossy. Centric, not asymmetrical or anything like that. Did I sufficiently cover that? Are we good?
We are good.
All right, should we go talk about some MLS?
Yes.
Okay.
Busy weekend of Major League Soccer. The LA Galaxy with a 1-0 home win over Seattle. Brazilian Gabriel Peck with the only goal in the opening minutes. The Galaxy unbeaten and in first place in the West, while Seattle are dead last with no wins from 5 games.
Well, look, the Galaxy talked about making changes, which they did. The Galaxy talked about sticking with Greg Vanney, which they did. And while it still is relatively early days, it looks like that was the right thing to do. And we've talked about Painsil and how important he is. Peck, who scored today. This is, I hesitate to go overboard in terms of praising the Galaxy, because the reality is that since 1996, this is what you've promised. So when you live up to what you have promised, yeah, you get a thank you, but you don't go overboard. So I'm glad the Galaxy is back with my Galaxy background. I think this is good for the league. They are doing it in a little different way. It's certainly not a perfect team, and they will have their ups and downs through this season, but this is kind of what we expect. I'll be interested to know how much of it is, just the way that this has all come about very early. And if you really talk to Greg Vanney and company there, are they doing something different? Have they changed the recipe to have this? Or is it just the signings that they have now actually are good and are impactful in the league? Defensively, they've been very, very good. And so it's not rarefied air, like I said, for the Galaxy, but certainly after what's happened over the last few years, this is a big step in the right direction.
Real Salt Lake trailed St. Louis 1-0 in the second half, but Christian Arango scored a hat trick, so RSL took it 3-1.
He did. And there's a lot of people that feel that he probably shouldn't have been on the field. There was a moment where, you know, in the craziness that happens in the box, even in this day and age with VAR, it's still difficult to see some of the things that are going on. But there is video of him, I guess, striking the guy that was marking him. And I was watching, you know, some of the MLS over there on Apple and Sasha Kleshin and company talking about it. And there was a disagreement between Bradley Wright Phillips and Sasha Kleshin about, was it actually him hitting it? Look, he's a great goal scorer. And in this moment, I think he probably deserved a red card. You can't even strike out at a player, which is ultimately what he did. But RSL won't care because he stayed on the field, got his hat trick, and we've seen him, what he has been to MLS, but now doing it for RSL, that was something to behold. Bunch of different types of goals.
Yeah, that incident notwithstanding, I find him to be one of the most underrated players in recent MLS
underrated,
history.
Really?
Yes, off to another great start this season. 5 goals,
hold
4 assists already.
What do you mean underrated?
I don't think he gets the respect he deserves. We talked about this when he was at LAFC. You even referred to him as the Rodney Dangerfield of MLS. So you agreed with me at one point.
Yeah. Well, he was underrated by LAFC in that they were constantly talking about a move. And again, to your point, we were saying, hey, you got this great player here. And to be able to do it while everybody's talking about they need to upgrade, they need to move on. So I guess he's underrated.
Well, you felt so strongly about it, you ripped off your glasses. That was a Shannon Sharp, Skip Bayless moment.
Is that the move?
They famously had an incident.
Oh, really? When the glasses came off,
yeah.
That was it?
Yeah.
I love you, buddy. You know, even with your Cucho, takes. Yeah, I don't think that he is undervalued from an MLS perspective, which is why I think RSL said, yeah, we will take that guy. No problem. And this is the type of stuff that they want.
Another guy with no trouble finding the back of the net is Luis Suarez. He bagged his 7th in all competitions, a header off a set piece in Inter Miami's 1-1 home draw with NYCFC. Martinez scored for New York. Messi did not play due to injury.
So when Messi doesn't play, see, the level of interest that I know people have, and including myself, has is diminished. And that's to be expected, right? Again, you know, we've seen this team kind of fluctuate without Messi being at times good and at times bad. And this was kind of a mixture of both. But Suarez, all right, he still scores goals and he still is a pain in the ass out there, whether he's running through the box or whether he's just running around and screaming and yelling and complaining about. I think that Miami probably should have lost this game, and and NYCFC had a bunch of opportunities there. But if an Inter Miami game happens without Messi, does it really happen?
Yes. Nashville and Columbus played to a 2-2 draw. Zawadki and Hinestroza for Columbus. Mukhtar and Godoy for Nashville. The Godoy goal, a spectacular acrobatic kick.
You know, I mentioned Vision Quest at the beginning of the show. There's a scene in Vision Quest where Matthew Modine and his boss is describing how in his little apartment, he had seen Pele do a bicycle kick and tears streaming down this guy who's a chef at he works in the kitchen at the local hotel, and he knows nothing about soccer, and yet seeing the joy and the artistry and the talent and the incredible mastery of your body and skill of Pelé doing the bicycle kick. Bicycle kicks never get old. Some of them are, they're not all created equal, but they still require, just when you really look at it, an incredible amount of ability and timing and concentration and talent. And they are magical. And Godoy will have that for the rest of his life to be able to say, yeah, you want to see me throw a bike? There it is. And he hit it so well. It wasn't, it was so pure, and it's going to go down as one of the great goals of this year. So while Nashville let 3 points get away against, albeit a very good Columbus Crew team, this game is going to remember for the Godoy goal. And so well done. Thank you for providing yet another moment of magic. And like in Vision Quest, maybe there was somebody else out there that in that brief moment, Annabelle Godoy gave a magical moment to and maybe affected them personally and emotionally in a positive, positive way.
Cucho Hernandez, who was not injured, did not play in this game. When Wilfred Nancy was asked about it afterwards, he said, team policy. And then when he was asked about Tuesday and Cucho, he said, we'll see. The Tuesday he's referring to is Columbus hosts Tigres in the CONCACAF Champions Cup quarterfinal first leg. Also that night, New England hosts Club America. Then Wednesday, Inter Miami Monterrey had Ediano Pachuca. All four matches on FS1, doubleheaders Tuesday and Wednesday. We're excited about it.
What was the reason given?
Team policy.
Well, that narrows it down.
Yes. I mean,
so obviously he did something that's a no-no. You know, it could be anything from showing up late to taking a swing at somebody and anywhere in there, or who knows, maybe even more. We'll find out what is happening, but it has to have been serious enough where Wilfred Nancy said, no, that's not going to happen here. And an important player. And we were talking about Arango and how important he is. Yeah. So now I'm so curious. I need to find out what it is. Hopefully it comes out. And hopefully it's not too bad.
As for the CONCACAF Champions Cup I mentioned, we've had four MLS versus Liga MX matchups in this edition of the competition. Liga MX has won all four. We have three more in this round, so MLS really needs to step up here. I don't think it's going to come in New England, Club America. New England last in the East, winless through five games. Club America level on points atop Liga MX. I think America are solid favorites in that tie, particularly since the second leg will be at the Azteca because they scheduled a motocross event at Gillette Stadium that night. So I like America to move on there. But the other two, Columbus Tigres and Inter Miami Monterrey, pretty close to 50-50. And Inter Miami Monterrey, if you told me Messi is going to start and be close to 100% for both games, I would actually favor Inter Miami.
Well, and I would care because Messi's playing. okay, so I got Pachuca coming through with not a problem, smoking a coffee against Herediano. I got Inter Miami with or without Messi coming through against Monterrey. I have Club America coming through against New England, ultimately. And I would have said that even if New England was playing the second game at home. And I think I'll put Columbus over Tigres, which would have two Mexican teams and two MLS teams ultimately in the semifinals there. And then do we know who they play? Do we know how it crosses over?
Then it would be Club America versus Pachuca in an all-Mexican semifinal.
So all MLS
and then Inter Miami Columbus in an all-MLS semifinal if it goes the way you just said. Let me ask you from a club versus country perspective. Yeah. If Monterrey knock off Inter Miami, but it's because Brandon Vasquez goes nuts in both games, will you be happy even though it's a Liga MX team knocking off an MLS team?
I think I will be torn. Okay, so would you rather have Brandon Vasquez do well or an MLS team do well? And obviously, like you said, at the expense. While I wear my MLS on my sleeve, I think America and American players, I think that takes precedence. I think I would still be happy if Brandon Vasquez, if he is going to be the source of our failure, when I say MLS's failure, I'm happier about that. And I'm happy for him. And from a big picture perspective, I think it has benefits. If Greg Berhalter at some point decides to freaking call him in, which I hope that he does.
We will see what happens. That is it.
All right. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for Ask Alexa. Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. Keep in mind that our State of the Union podcast handle out there on social media is SOTU with Alexi. Use that hashtag Ask Alexi out there on the social media platforms, or you can call into our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is 657-549-2297. That's 657-549-2297. Mossy, what do the folks want to know this show?
We have two voicemails. Let's listen to the first one right now.
Hey, Alexi, Mossy, this is Jim from Kalamazoo. I just have a quick question. On the last podcast, you mentioned that Christian Pulisic wasn't good at corners. Like, how can you be a pro athlete? How can you be a world-class athlete and have a hole in your game such as free kicks? Could you please tell me what you do actually do at practice and how anybody could be bad at free kicks and stuff like that? Hi, thanks, bye. Love the show.
Okay, thank you, Jim from Kalamazoo. It's a good question, and I share your frustration, and I think there are a lot of people out there, that in particular, when it comes to this U.S. men's national team, when Christian Pulisic walks out to the corner, it's a 50-50 chance that, first off, it's going to clear the first guy. I think it's easy to blame the kicker, and believe me, at times it is completely fair and valid to blame a kicker in a situation like this. But the coordination and the understanding as to what is at least being attempted to have happen there, I think is important. So, you know, through a week of training, there are moments during your training days that are devoted to set pieces. And whether that's the individual actually kicking and taking a shot on goal, that's much more of a solitary type of thing. And a lot of times that happens after training. But the ones that are drawn up, the ones that are obviously corner kicks or set pieces where you're putting it kind of into the box, that has to be kind of part of the training session. Sometimes it's within an actual game that you're playing, and then there's some stoppages. Sometimes they move it around to have multiple bites at the apple, sometimes at the end of the training. And first and foremost, at least the way that I look at these, and you know, I would be brought up because of my ability in the air, my height, I need to know where the ball is going, where you're attempting to put it. I don't need to know the exact place, but these are professionals, to your point, Jim, and you would like to think that on a consistent basis, they should be able to put it in an area. But I will say this, when you see players hit free kicks, more often than not, it doesn't go where they want it to go. You see it going all over the place. So it's harder than people think. But what irritates me is when it doesn't clear the first guy, because either in a situation like this, if Christian Pulisic is taking it, he doesn't have the skill, to your point, to get it over that first guy, or there is not somebody there that is told you need to get in that first post and get in front of somebody. And that to me is lack of planning. Keep in mind that this is a national team now in this era that has 10,000 coaches, including, by the way, set piece coaches that we've talked about before on the program. We never had set piece coaches, but there are people, men and women out there, whose specific job is to do things right on set pieces. I don't know why Christian Pulisic continues to be put out there if it is truly a situation where you've told Christian Pulisic this is where the ball needs to go and he does not have the ability for whatever reason of putting it there. And look, there are some blind spots out there. There are some weaknesses out there, even for great players like Christian Pulisic.
Star players like to take set pieces. Yep. It's a status thing. So it can be a tricky conversation for a manager to take him off of it. Do you think we're at that point with Berhalter and Pulisic?
I don't think that that is the reason. I think they truly believe, Greg Berhalter and his staff truly believe that Christian Pulisic is the best. And sometimes if the best player taking it is actually also really, really good in the box, I don't think that's the case here. Because I don't think that they're losing anything by having Christian Pulisic. But obviously you need someone that consistently can... I mean, if I, as a player coming up for a set piece, if I in my mind know that 9 out of 10 times this is where it's going to be, the advantage that I have is it's so valuable. But when I watch this team, I get frustrated because I see time and time again these wasted opportunities. I didn't concentrate on set pieces until I probably got to college. Growing up, I didn't think about them. It was like, we throw it in the mixer, see what happens, right? But the picks and the roles and the, you know, the hand signals and the understanding and the array of different plays that you had, that didn't come into my thinking about the game until much later. But ignore it at your own peril.
You scored against England at Foxborough.
Yep.
Do you remember who took that?
Tab Ramos, the great Tab Ramos, who we discussed before, he put that exactly where it needed to be. And it's like, you're a basketball guy, right, Mossy? I think, and I know enough about basketball, where sometimes in the alley-oop, you just kind of throw it up in that area and let the guy go get it. Same with football. Sometimes with wide receivers, you throw it up in that area and just let the guys go get it. Just give me a chance. What used to drive me crazy was, here we come. We're running up as center backs oftentimes into the 18, right? We get all set. We all know what the play is. You give them the signal. And then it gets cut off at the near post, and it's a freaking counter down the other way, and I got to haul my ass back. And I vividly remember turning around and running and cussing out Eric Winalda or whoever it ends up being. It could have been Tab too, because he could have screwed it up too, because I got to get my ass back and now defend, because you couldn't clear the first guy at the post. You couldn't put it where we wanted it to be. So it is an art. It is a skill. I think it's an important one, especially in this day and age where, you know, fouls are, I guess they're easier to come by in terms of the way that teams play. And they can be the differentiation between winning and losing. And for a team like the U.S. that needs every little advantage it can possibly, you know, eke out against, especially against elite teams, man, we better improve.
Very quickly, you mentioned basketball. We came in today. Tennessee had just lost to Purdue in the Elite Eight. I have never seen Sean Sullivan so annoyed.
Wow. I didn't even realize that it was going on. I didn't really follow it. And I made the mistake of asking him about it. Man, oh man. He was Eeyore, and you know, somebody, you know what, in his, oh, it was bad. He is down and out. But he explained it to me that this was the first time they were possibly going to be in the Final Four. And so that was ripped away from them. So condolences.
He is not a fan of Zach Edey.
No, he said that they don't know how to referee against this big 7-foot guy.
Correct. Speaking of college sports, Jim is from Kalamazoo, Michigan. That's where Derek Jeter grew up, which is why he's a big Michigan sports fan. He was at the national championship game, which I went to.
Okay. Do we have any other ones?
We do. Let's take a listen to the other voicemail.
Hey guys, this is Steve Hogan in Asheville, North Carolina. Enjoy watching the podcast on YouTube a couple times a week. Alexi, you mentioned a reunion for the 30th anniversary of the 94 World Cup team this morning on the podcast. Man, you should put that together. You should get those guys together, have them tell some stories, and keep the legacy going. So thanks for all y'all both do. And look forward to the next episode. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Steve from Asheville. And also thank you for watching the pod over there on YouTube. And look, I know people get it different ways. It amazes me how many people actually watch this show. And you know, my kids get their news from TikTok and YouTube and all that kind of stuff. And what YouTube is to multiple generations now is pretty amazing. So I'm glad that you watch it. I'm glad that you, whether you're listening or watching it, I'm just glad that you like the show. When it comes to the 94 reunion, as I mentioned, it is 30 years. And it's just a little strange, I think, because of what 26 is going to mean. I think there's so much focus, rightfully so, on that summer. And there will be plenty of celebration of what 94 was, and to be fair, what 99 was in terms of previous World Cups in the U.S., both men's and women's, and where we are in 26. But there should be something this summer. And the fact that we have a big tournament in the form of Copa America, the fact that it is here in the United States, I think it is ripe for something like that. You know, maybe I'll try to figure out a way to bring everybody together. Knock on wood, and thankfully, everybody but the late, great Fernando Clavijo are still around and with us. And but in the past 30 years, plenty has happened in all of our lives, good and bad. The interesting thing also when it comes to that generation and that group is almost every single one of them continued on working in soccer. And in one way or the other is working in soccer. I see many of them when it comes to the stuff that we do, whether it's Tony Meola or Kobe Jones or Eric Winalda. You know, Harks is in the coaching ranks. Tab Ramos is in the coaching ranks. The list goes on. I just saw Mike Sorber, you know, a few months ago in St. Louis. So we all keep in touch in that if I needed something or if I had a question or if I just wanted to reach out and say hello, I certainly have that at my fingertips. But it would be nice to kind of get everybody in a room together and, you know, talk about the old days, I guess.
They put out a video of your comments about Tab Ramos. You were singing his praises in our last podcast. Both Tony Meola and Eric Winalda agreed with you, but there were some younger fans pushing back, looking at Tab's resume, the club pedigree, how good could he have been? So Eric was arguing with those people. So your Tab Ramos comments triggered some interesting conversation on X.
Look, in the litany of takes that I have had, I feel that is, while incredibly true, and I stand by it, also not even close to one of the hottest takes out there. And if you are either young or old and you disagree, okay, fine. I can respect the fact that you have a differing opinion, as asinine as it may be.
Your single hottest take is that you don't think the Naked Gun movies are funny.
Oh, no, I think they're stupid. I think that they're, yeah, I think they're completely stupid.
Wow.
Okay, anything else, Mossy?
That's it.
All right, well, we come to the end of our show, and at the end of each and every show, I give you my one for the road, and I thought about this for a while, but it requires a little bit of a setup, Mossy. I'll let you do that.
Yeah, the best Premier League game of the weekend took place at St. James Park. Newcastle trailed West Ham 3-1 in the second half. They rallied for a 4-3 victory, but their comeback was aided by a very controversial penalty decision. When they were down 3-1, Calvin Phillips went to clear a ball in his own box. Anthony Gordon stepped in front of him at the last second, so Phillips ended up kicking Gordon. Newcastle were awarded a penalty. Most people disagreed with this. What say you?
Yeah, so I thought about this, and, you know, there's a, you know, I was kind of being a smartass, as I am often apt to do over there on the X machine, and I, you know, I said, well, ridiculous, these replacement referees are horrible. Obviously, these are not replacement referees. A couple of points I was trying to make, and, you know, during the whole replacement referee thing in Major League Soccer, you know, the way that countries and cultures referee the game, the way that we look at referees, the value that we do or don't attach to referees, and the different ways that the laws of the game are interpreted and obviously refereed relative to, you know, where you are in the world and different leagues and all that. In this particular instance, I just thought it was so interesting the different ways that people saw this play and completely differently than, you know, somebody else. The act of shielding the ball is something that you are taught at a young age. But I do think that the general consensus out there when it comes to shielding a ball is putting, yes, your body in between a player and the ball, but what makes this instance really unique is that the body is turned towards the player and away from the actual ball. And I mean, I know I'm old, but I don't think it's changed that much that when you are taught to shield the ball, it is always in the context of you facing the ball with your back to the player that you are shielding the ball to. I also don't deny that you have a right to space on the field. And a lot of people argued that, look, this guy saw the ball, was in the process of kicking it, but the space between the foot and the ball changed in that a player then occupied that space, in which case the person kicking the ball theoretically is responsible now for their follow through into the ball. And that's why this was called. I think there are smart people out there that could probably go either way on this thing. I did think that in this instance, turning around and putting your ass to the ball and your chest to the player was not a situation where, that you were shielding the ball. I do get that kicking a player in and of itself can certainly be called a foul. But ultimately, what this showed is whether you have replacement referees or regular referees, you are always going to have disagreement. You are always going to be faced with subjective decisions to be made. And until the humans are taken out of the equation, and who knows, that might not be far off, but until that happens, you are going to be faced with a situation where humans are going to make decisions based on their background and based on their baggage and based on their history that you may or may not like and may not agree with. And there was a time where we actually encouraged and wanted that in the game. And I don't think that that has gone away necessarily with VAR. We just argue about different things. And I hope that it never goes away. And this is arguably the best league in the world. A lot of people argue that. And yet, on a consistent basis, we are screaming and yelling about referees, about this call or that call, and they make horrible calls. They don't do that. I don't know what ultimately the answer is. I do think that even while I can grumpy old man things, I like what the game is today in terms of the technology that has been implemented and even the technology that maybe hasn't been implemented. I like where it is today. Because there is still, and Masi, you were here. Remember when we talked about the fear of the gray area going out of the game? There are still gray areas in our game. There are still subjective parts of our game. And I think that's a good thing. And I don't think that anytime soon that's going to go away. At least I hope that it doesn't go away. But it also means that come Monday morning, like a lot of sports, we're going to be arguing and disagreeing about the men and women that we put in charge of making these ultimate decisions. But that's kind of what sports is. And I know when you have a horse in the race, in this case, when you have a team that you love, those calls, they hurt you that much more. But in the greater scheme of things, this is ultimately what I love about sports.
A couple of miscellaneous notes before we go. I received a phone call yesterday from our former producer, Luis Aguilar.
Yeah, really?
Now, it was an accident. He was trying to call his mother and accidentally called me. Nevertheless, we chatted for a few minutes. He's doing well. He wanted me to say hi to you and everybody.
Oh, I love him. All right.
Also, wonderful. You mentioned at the top of the pod that you're going to be going away this week. I'd like for you to tell the folks why, because I have a couple of thoughts.
Okay, so I have teenage children. And one of them has reached that age when they have the opportunity to go to college. These are all first world problems, okay? But we are taking a little trip, and I am going out to the East Coast to look at some different schools with her and to literally get the lay of the land to figure this all out. I think we have come to the conclusion that she wants to get as far away from me and her mother as possible. And I'm okay with that. I want her, she's a Southern California raised girl, and I want her to, you know, spread her wings and go out and, you know, see other parts of the country. And one of the ways she can do that is through college. So yeah, I will be on the road this week. Don't worry. We have plenty of content that we will put up. But yeah, I'm going to head out. Mossy, suggestions or concerns?
Two things. One of the greatest episodes in Sopranos history was an episode in the first season in which Tony takes Meadow to see colleges. Although I know you don't care for that show, I would recommend you watching that episode tonight with your daughter. I think that would be fun. Number two, on Tuesday night, you and I attended an award show in downtown LA along with Sean Sullivan and Aaron Schechter. We went to a bar afterwards.
Yep.
And the most endearing moment of the evening for me was when you pulled Aaron aside, explained that you're going to be taking your teenage daughter to see colleges and you're a bit overwhelmed trying to wrap your head around this whole process. And she talked you through it and dropped all these pearls of wisdom.
She was wonderful. And, you know, she's obviously a whole lot younger and much closer to it. And it's the world, Mossy, has changed so much since when I was going through it. And my particular situation was rather unique. And look, I know, like I said, these are first world problems, and she's very, very fortunate to be able to do this. But it was nice to hear Erin talk about her experiences, and to say, well, first and foremost, that it's going to be fine.
And this was Erin Schechter at 11 p.m. after downing caipirinhas. Imagine how wise she must be in the middle of the day.
That's true. I think she's wise no matter what. She's a wonderful, wonderful young woman, and we're so fortunate to have her here at Fox.
She did make an incredible revelation. Wisconsin was her dream school, not USC.
Yes, exactly. But she turned out okay too, right? Wisconsin's really hot, Mus. Lots of people like Wisconsin, and that's the other thing. Like some of these places that back in the day when I was, coming out, and the only place that I got into was Rutgers, but some of these places that we didn't even think about as ooh and ah when it comes to it, but the world has changed, Musty, and that's, I guess that's a good thing. So anyway, I'll be on the road and, I'll check in and let you know how things are going out there. Anything before we go?
That is it.
As I said, there will be a show later on this week. We taped something special that I know you're going to like. Thank you to everybody that called in today on our State of the Union podcast hotline at 657-549-2297. Thank you, everybody, including those that watch it on YouTube or over there on Spotify or Apple or all the different places that you have out there. It means the world to us that you join us a couple times a week here. And we talked about this growing from a little closet into what it is, but we still got a lot of growth, I think, too, and we still got some wonderful things coming down the pipe. All right, I will talk to you next week, so have a wonderful week of soccer, both on and off the field, and until then, and as always, my friends, size the damn.